Hello and welcome to the very last Tennis Menu Daily Roland Garros Show. Val Febo here with you, and you can head to thetennismenu.com and grab your annual subscription for just $99.90 US, containing over 600 tennis-specific drills to make you a better tennis coach. And that's headed up by Mark Zafoulas, our great friend on this show with his unparalleled analysis and coaching techniques on this program. Massive show lined up for you. And Rafa Nadal, well, 13 Roland Garros titles. Need we say more? An unbelievable display against Novak Djokovic last night in which he tore the serve apart. It was just genuinely, it was the Rafa of old, the Rafa of 2005 to 2008 when he was just unmatchable on clay and he was just genuinely brilliant. And we're going to review everything and what he did. And I'm still shocked at the scoreline, to be honest, 6-1. 6-2, 7-5 in favor of Nadal. We're going to review every single aspect of this match today and what happened and the future. What does 2021 hold and the back end of 2020 hold for these two men and the rest of the ATP? We'll talk a lot more about that on today's show. But before we do any of it, Mark Zafoulas, the best high performance coach in the business, joins me. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm going really well, Val. And yeah, what an incredible night and incredible tournament Roland Garros was this year. Obviously, a very, very different different Grand Slam to what we're used to in a different time of year, different condition, but the same result. Rafael Nadal was incredible last night and just so hard to stop. I mean, I don't even know why I even went against him on clay. I mean, he's the king of clay for a reason. He's unbelievable to watch. And just when he needs to step it up, he did, and he did last night. And Novak wasn't even in the ballpark last night. So, yeah, great result.
Well, the question is, did anybody win our bets? None of us. I had Rafa in four. Joel Stone Cold Fritchie, how are you? You had Novak in, Rafa in five. Mark had Novak in four, I'm pretty sure it was. But Joel, how are you?
I'm going well, boys. We are not worthy.
Well, we're not. He's still bowing. He's still going. Look at him go. I've never seen him move so much on Zoom. There you go. But no, it was genuinely phenomenal. And as I said off the top, 6-love, 6-2, 7-5. And the stat that still blows my mind to smithereens is that Rafa hit 31 winners and only 14 unforced errors. Listen to what Novak's numbers were. 38 winners. Yeah, fine. 52 unforced errors. And this is reminiscent of two Grand Slam finals in my memory, the 2008 French Open final when Rafa absolutely pants Roger Federer, a 6-1, 6-3, 6-love. Federer hit something along the lines of 57 unforced errors in that match. And also the 2019 Australian Open final, which Mark, you and I were talking about off air, where Rafa has just completely turned the tables. Novak destroyed him that night and Rafa and on Novak's court, Rod Laver Arena. And now we've come to Rafa's court at Court Philippe Chatrier. And Rafa has done the exact same thing in a truly unbelievable display.
Yeah, 100% correct, Val. And I'll just show you the stats that will come up here. But if you can see here, I'll just give it a little bit of a highlight. But if you've got Novak Djokovic is the top number here. And he was in that match in 2019. He hit 34 winners and only 9 unforced errors in the match. Okay, so obviously this morning was a total flip around. In that match, Nadal hit 28 unforced errors and only 20 winners. And we looked at tonight, today's match, which I thought was absolutely incredible, like a flip around. And you can see the difference here when you look at Novak. It was almost an un-Novak performance. 52 unforced errors is an un-Novak performance. Now, we did say he needed to take the game away from Rafa. We did say he needed to come and be a bit more aggressive. Obviously, 38 winners is really good for a Novak match. But the 52 unforced errors is definitely un-Novak-like. The other thing that I thought was interesting, 27 net approaches, which is very uncommon for Novak Djokovic as well. And he did probably try and do things out of the ordinary for Novak to be doing, but he almost had to. I mean, at the end of the day, he was beaten and beaten comprehensively, and he had to try different things. And he also, I think there was one thing that we did bring up yesterday on the show also, which I know our great friend, Mr. Shane Leonage, from Data Driven Sports Analytics, had a stat on his Twitter account. He had 29 attempted drop shots. He only had a 45% success rate in that. And it was interesting to watch because he was actually doing it so often it became predictable. And it needed to be done at different times and obviously in different situations. But yeah, I mean, he did try to take some stuff away from Rafa, but I mean, Rafa was literally in a field of his own today, and there was no one that was going to stop him.
Yep. Well, Rafa, speaking of fields of their own, Fidal sit alone atop the Grand Slam mountain now, and it's the two of them in 2020. Rafa joins Roger. Roger did lead the overall 20-16 in favor of him, and Rafa has won four since Roger's 2018 Australian Open triumph. So unbelievable to see the two of them, and Roger Federer sending Rafael Nadal a congratulatory note on Instagram and social media, and just saying how happy he is for his great friend to share the spotlight with him. And it's genuinely unbelievable, Joel, let alone seeing one person get to 20 Grand Slams, and now we're seeing two of the greatest of all time sitting on top of that tree, and it's genuinely unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. And just on that, I guess we can call it an exchange or a congratulatory message from Roger to Rafa that we saw. That was quite heartwarming, I thought. Obviously, we know that tennis is quite an individual sport, and these guys have been at the top for so long, but it's great, and it's why we really love it to see that the friendships win out at the end of the day. But along with seeing two players on 20 Grand Slams, incredible in itself, but just every time that it crosses my mind and that we think about it again and again, that Rafa has 13 Roland Garros titles, insane. I don't think we're ever going to see anyone win that amount of, certainly of titles, certainly not on clay, but on any surface, I don't think. That's going to go unmatched, I think, forever.
Yep. Look, they all say records are made to be broken, but this one will stand the test of time. And 14 Grand Slam titles. And I can't wait for tennis historians to be looking back in 100 years and saying just how good was Rafael Nadal on clay. And then they'll get this footage out and they'll just understand the magnitude of what the Spaniard has been able to do since that first triumph over Mariano Puerta in 2005. And that was his 100th win at Roland Garros, his 999th career win. And the next tournament he plays, he'll be going for match win number 1,000, which nobody's achieved since Roger did back in 2015 in Brisbane. So it's genuinely magnificent what we've seen. And I think people do forget sometimes in amongst who they follow and who they'd rather win about what Rafael Nadal has done at the French Open and on clay in general. Like, he's won, in addition, I think over 10 titles in Rome, 10 titles in Madrid, 10 titles, or not Madrid, but 10 titles in Barcelona and more than 10 in Monte Carlo as well. He has been simply phenomenal, as Robbie Koenig would say. Mm-hmm. And I think we should, and you're right, Joel, we are not worthy to see someone ply his trade so well for 15 years and continue to just buck the trend and turn those record books and continue this just sheer dominance is unbelievable. And it's such a pleasure to watch him. And just the tactical nous that we spoke about yesterday, Mark, of what Nadal is able to do. And you spoke about the sheer, I think we've spoken a lot this tournament about the sheer height that Rafa plays at the French Open with his height over the net. It's something to behold, the amount of kick that he gets on the ball.
Yeah, and last night was interesting because he really played a slightly different game. I haven't seen him play in that manner against Novak. He was playing a lot heavier and a lot slower on the first ball, making Novak hit from above his shoulders and play or generate his own ball speed. And Novak couldn't do it, and he was hitting short. And then Nadal would then take over with his big forehand. And I thought that was really interesting how he would push the ball with less speed than he probably was, but more height to get that bounce. And, got the return that he wanted, and then it was able to set up the point from there. And he was just incredible. I mean, the balls he was playing from all over the court, no matter if it was a passing shot, whether he was scrambling a drop shot, whether he was in control or in defense, he was able to hit his spots yesterday. And there was one criticism I did have of him in the quarterfinal was he was hitting the ball so short against Jannik Sinner. And he was just hitting shorter and shorter. And last night, his depth on the ball was probably what got him to the level that he was at. He was hitting great depth with nice height and pushing Novak to actually have to generate his own ball speed, and Novak just couldn't do it last night. And whether or not it was the injury or whether or not it was just Rafa being too good or a bit of both, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because Rafa Nadal was just totally in control last night.
Yep, not even God would have beaten Nadal last night. And it's genuinely phenomenal. And look, Novak did say that Rafa was perfect yesterday and that there was nothing that he could do to match him. And yes, there was the neck injury, but I think after the Stefanos Tsitsipas match, my confidence was a bit lost in Djokovic because Steph was able to really raise his level and take it to Novak. Just the cramp at the end and the tactical awareness of Djokovic was able to get him over the line, and that comes with experience. But I think as Tsitsipas and Zverev and team just continue to go through, I think they're going to be able to challenge these big guys a little bit more at the slams. And obviously it hasn't happened here, but it did happen at the US Open, albeit Novak got defaulted and Rafa and Roger didn't play. But I think when we come to Melbourne Park next year, I think it's going to be one of the most even Grand Slams that we've seen in a very long time when it comes to the men's draw. And I'm really excited about that because I genuinely think we could have about eight men who could win that title. So it's really exciting. But looking at Djokovic now, and I think his Grand Slam year, he's lost one completed match, I guess, in Grand Slams with his loss last night, his other loss coming as the well-known default now against Pablo Carreño Busta at the US Open. But for one completed match loss in 2020, to come away with one Grand Slam, it just shows how cruel sport can be and how tough it is to actually win these elusive tournaments that come around four times a year. And he sits three behind Roger and Rafa now. I'm calling it, guys. He's not getting there. I'm calling it.
Big call.
I know it is, but I don't think Djokovic is going to get to the 20. The fact that he was looking invincible at the start of this tournament, and the fact that he couldn't match it with Rafa after he has done so many times. He's one of only two men to beat Rafa at Roland Garros, and to get belted like he did. I just think that when, and I know he owns Melbourne Park with the feats that he's been able to achieve there. But I think Dominic Thiem probably should have won that match at the start of the year. And I just think that even though with what we've seen, you know, what is he, 37-2 or something to start this season, I just think that maybe things are going to start to slow down for the big three, even though they've won two of the three majors this year. I reckon now it's time for guys like Tsitsipas, for guys like Medvedev, Khachanov and Thiem and Zverev and all these guys to take the mantle. And I think they're going to be just as hungry as ever. As I said, for the 2021 Australian Open, I think that is going to be one of the most important Grand Slams in the history of tennis in terms of what we're going to see and the narratives that are going to emerge from that Grand Slam should we either see that one of the big three win or one of the newcomers win. Look, it's poised perfectly.
I'm a big believer that I think that these, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, I've been saying for about 4 years, it's almost time for these guys to hand over the mantle of Grand Slams. And they just seem to keep getting better. And I genuinely think that there's still a few Grand Slams in all three of them. And I think there's still possibilities. I think, you know, Nadal's going to be hard to beat on clay. I think Roger still got it for the grass. And I still think Novak's got it on the hard court. And those guys need to be, if you're going to beat or win a Grand Slam, if you're Tsitsipas or you're Zverev or your Dominic Thiem, you're pretty much going to have to beat one and possibly two of those players to win the tournament. Now, that's going to be a real challenging aspect. I think it's going to be an interesting Australian Open, as you did mention, Val. I think it's, you know, obviously Craig Tiley and his team have got their work cut out to be able to get things right. Obviously, we're still in lockdown here in Melbourne and it is very challenging. At the moment, we can't even get on a tennis court to practice in a community tennis court. All the nets have been pulled down. So, you know, will they be able to hold a Grand Slam event plus some lead-up tournaments here? I'm not too sure. I think it will go ahead, but it's going to be a very, very different Grand Slam and different look. That therefore, will players be able to bring families and do that sort of thing again? I don't know. Where does that leave guys like Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, who do have families? They do travel everywhere with to travel across the whole way across the world. It's going to be a real interesting one. And I really find that these guys work better when they've got their teams around them. And, you know, when you don't have your family, you're 36, 35, 36 years old, you've got, you know, a partner and your kids and you've got your coaches and so forth, to only be allowed maybe one or two of those people into the tournament, you know, will that stop any of those players traveling? And it's going to be a very interesting sort of couple of months ahead before the Australian Open. But, you know, I think if those big three come down, I think it's still, I mean, obviously the Australian Open is always going to be Novak's to lose. You know, I think he's the still the form player, even though, you know, he lost yesterday, but you know, he's only lost one match really, if we think about it, for the whole year. So he's still going pretty well. Obviously, Rafa on clay is hard to beat, but hopefully Roger comes back and Roger is fit enough to be able to challenge these guys as well, because obviously coming back from the injury now at his age, will he be able to sustain the level that he's always played at? Will he be able to get enough matches under his belt to be able to be ready? That's another question as well. But yeah, very interesting look towards the Australian Open for 2021.
Yep. And this is where playing the ATP Cup, I think is something that Roger needs to consider, if or any lead up tournament he needs to play. I don't think he can come in cold to the Australian Open anymore. Like, you're 39 years old coming into the tournament. You need the match practice and yeah, hitting up's great. You can still have your touch, but you need to be able to be match fit, as we talked about with so many players coming into this, coming into the tennis resumption. And in 2017, I think we saw a lot of difficulties for Roger in that sense, because the first set he played at the Australian Open after he played the Hotman Cup, lucky he played that, Jürgen Meltzer, the qualifier, took a set off him. Then he was pushed to five by Nishikori in the fourth round. And then in the semis, he was able to back up, but he had the energy. Stan pushed him to five from two sets down, and then he beat Rafa in five as well. So I think playing any sort of match where you're at, like, and that's where the Hotman Cup was great. And I think, Joel, if you're looking at what Federer's, I think, next move is coming back to tennis, it has to be, if the ATP Cup goes ahead, Switzerland have to be a part of it because he needs the matches.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think so. Yeah, ATP Cup, Brisbane, I don't think we'll play Sydney. But yeah, I would think that those events would be the ones.
Well, Sydney and Brisbane are the same thing in the ATP Cup. Those tournaments are done.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, no, he would have to. Yeah. I think there's really no question about that. I mean, at the age that he's at, and, as Mark said, I mean, really Novak, well, he Rod Laver Arena is his castle. So, I think it's going to take a lot to beat him. And, I mean, the one that I'm really looking forward to though, going into 2021 is Wimbledon. Because I think that more, you know, even though guys like Zverev and Team and Tsitsipas and Medvedev, these guys obviously can compete on hard court. They know how to play hard courts, but I think the grass will really bring some of those guys more into play than the hard court, and they can really utilize their strengths, like Steph, Daniil, the guys that have big serves. I think that's where they'll come into it and really be able to push guys like Federer, like Nadal, and like Djokovic too.
Yeah, I agree. And Wimbledon next year is going to be so exciting because we didn't get it this year. And I think we were kind of robbed of seeing what the next chapter was at the All England Club because of that epic 2019 final that broke the hearts of so many people. And I reckon, yeah, I'm so excited to see what next year is going to bring. Obviously, we still have a couple of months left of this season, it culminating in the ATP finals. The WTA, I think, is pretty much done and dusted. I've seen the calendar and most of the tournaments look like they're cancelled. Sophia Kennan said it's pretty much it for her and she's wrapping up. So this is going to be a really exciting few months to see who finishes the year strongly and who is going to go into 2021 with the most confidence. And looking at the tournament, I think the NITO ATP finals are almost all set. I think Zverev in seventh spot is so far ahead of whoever of Schwartzman in eighth at the moment. So, and then you've got ninth as well, who will come in with Federer not being there. But what are your expectations for these players towards the end of the year, guys? And Mark, we'll start with you from a coaching sense. And who do you think going into, and it's obviously going to be a lull with no Grand Slams, but we've still got the Paris Masters to come and a few 500 events starting with St. Petersburg this week. What are your expectations going into the rest of the year?
I mean, if I'm a coach, expectations are to get as many matches as we can. I mean, that's obviously where we're at, and I've got a few players in a similar situation that are overseas and they haven't played for 4, 5, 6 months. So they just need to get playing again. And obviously, now that the rankings are unfrozen, it's important now to start backing up your points. So, you know, it was okay first couple of weeks back, but now that the tournaments are actually being held, your ranking will start dropping off in 12 months' time. So you need to start backing off or backing up your points. So, you know, it's a matter of getting back on the court and playing. You know, you've probably done two pre-seasons this year, which you probably, as an athlete or a coach, you weren't expecting. You know, you have your pre-season in December. Then again, you've got a pre-season pretty much from March through to the US Open. So it's almost like there's been two massive training blocks, and coaches are now, and players are just wanting to play. A lot of players will extend their season. I know there's a lot of people talking about no matter when it finishes, you know, up until December is fine. And then they'll do a 1 month little training block and then come back to Australia or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I guess the expectations are that players are going to want to get every bit of match play under their belt. They're going to try and get as much prize money under their belt, obviously being a tough year, and chase a few points. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, the lower end are going to look to try and get in the draws for January and February. So they need to play right the way through. Players like Novak, Rafa and Roger, they can do what they like. So, you know, you've got enough money, you've got enough points, you just go, I'll just pick and choose whatever I want to play. And so it's an interesting one because a lot of players will be in different situations, and you know, Dominic Thiem may calm down a little bit because he's had such a big year. He may pull back a little. You know, others might want to ramp it up. So very individualized programs up until the end of the year. But looking forward to next year, I think, you know, 2020 has been such a hell of a year for a lot of people. And, you know, and this show here, we're fortunate enough to do it in a situation where we've basically got time to do it. And we hopefully are bringing people some joy, some tennis knowledge, and obviously keeping them up to date. I mean, we wouldn't be able to do it if COVID wasn't around, probably, because we'd all be doing different bits and pieces. But it has given us an opportunity, and hopefully people are taking the opportunity at the moment to do things that they haven't been able to do for a while. And hopefully next year is back to normal for everyone, so we can get back to some normality with both life and obviously tennis would be nice.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think, as we said during the US Open, Mark, being able to do this show has been one of the positives of this whole lockdown, and being able to, you know, bring people the latest coaching analysis from Grand Slams and the latest news from the Slams and the majors and the wonderful narratives that have eventuated over the last couple of months. And you and I doing the US Open and Joel jumping on with us for the French Open. I think it's been fantastic. And Joel, what are your expectations for the rest of 2020? And what are you looking forward to most in 2021?
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess I'm really eager to see how certain players round out the year. And looking at guys, especially like Mark mentioned, Dominic Thiem, obviously he's played a lot of tennis the second year in a row, even though we've, you know, missed a lot of the calendar. And even a guy like Alex Zverev too. It's been a year where, and I'm actually, you know what, I'm going to talk a bit about him because I think 2020 has been a big year for him, especially because obviously he made the semifinals at the Australian Open. He cracked in to the US Open final. We were just waiting for him to take that next big step. Obviously he's won a year-end finals. And we've been talking a lot about him just being the next player potentially just to poke his head through and maybe break in and challenge the big boys. So obviously with him, because he's an interesting one because we know that he still has things to work on and they're quite clear. He's you know, his mental game and also the second serve. And I think if he can fix that second serve, 2021 will be a big year for him. And he's probably the one that I'm most excited to see next year, just to see what he takes out of the year. And over the summer or the European winter, what he works on, we know what he has to work on. But if he does work on that, can he convert it going into next year? And can he go one better potentially?
And exactly right. And that's the thing. He was so close at the US Open this year, served for it against Dominic Thiem in the fifth set and had that two sets to love lead and was so, so close to that elusive slam and couldn't get there. Who knows how much that'll weigh on his mind going into 2021. But just because we didn't chat about it yesterday, before we do wrap this show up for Roland Garros 2020, just before we do go, Mark, just what you're looking forward to in the women's side of things, because we didn't get a proper chance to talk about it and who you're looking forward to seeing push on in 2021. And then Joel, we'll get yours straight after Mark.
It's obviously been a great tournament for the females. It's been a lot more open than what it has probably ever. I think, you know, seeing qualifiers get through and seeing seeing players at 54 ranked in the world wins a Grand Slam, that to me has been the exciting part. And Iga Swiatek for me, and Joel alluded to this early in the tournament, she's just got so much to offer this game. And hopefully she's not just a clay court player and she can actually broaden that to all the different surfaces. I think she's got the quality too. She's got the tools to do it. You know, she can play big, she can play heavy, she can come to the net, she's got feel. So there's going to be a lot for her. Look, Sophia Kenin again, you know, proved that even though she is young, she's someone's going to be around for a fair while. And she's got that grit and determination. She's the female Nadal, I like calling her, because she's just so intense and very, very hard to match for intensity. So, you know, she's definitely one that I'd like to see. And I can't wait to see Ash Barty back. I mean, seeing her drinking beers is exciting, but I want to see her on the tennis court. And she's a superstar. I mean, I love watching her play. As a coach, I had the fortune of coaching against her as a 10, 11, 12-year-old, watching her develop and seeing her. And she was just the same little kid as she is now. She's like she hasn't changed. She's such a beautiful person, just competitive, loves her sport. And I just want to see her back playing again, because we want to see the best players playing on the court. And obviously COVID has stopped that happening. But the more we can have that, the better. And look, you know, having her playing against a Simona Halep and bringing Sofia Kenin and Iga Swiatek, these sort of players to me are exciting. And I can't wait for 2021 to see them play against each other.
Yeah, concur with the Ash Barty one. That was going to be mine after Joel finished. But yeah, Ash Barty, I'm so looking forward to seeing what she can bring. And as you said, Kenin and Swiatek, what we're going to see there. But Joel, what's your prospect for 2021?
Okay, so I'll give you three. So, and I'll try and make it quick. Obviously, Mark's mentioned Iga Swiatek, and we've spoken a lot about her. Yep. Naturally, you do look to how young players back up their success when they do have it. Obviously, Ostapenko comes to mind, Bouchard comes to mind after they had their little bits of success. Even though Jeannie, of course, didn't win a slam, but Ostapenko did. They kind of had their little periods of, you know, where they weren't as successful. Obviously, Ostapenko's had some injuries to deal with, but you know, when a player peaks so young, you don't want them to then dip and then become relatively obscure. But based on what we've seen from Iga, you know, from what she said, but also what she's delivered on court, I don't think we'll get that from her. And then the other two, kind of packaged up a little bit, Karolina Pliskova and Elena Svitolina. So they've been obviously around the WTA top 10 for a little while, and certainly for Karolina more than Elena. Time's probably running out for her a little bit. We've already spoken a bit about her in our daily shows for Roland Garros. She probably wants to get motoring and win a Grand Slam, because she's good enough to win one, but time is just slowly, slowly getting away from her.
Yep, agree. And we've discussed that at length. And I think Grigor Dimitrov is another one. What's he going to bring? And also, can Serena Williams get to number 24? That's the big question. Will we see it in 2021? Who knows? But for 2020, this is a wrap on Grand Slam Tennis. And this has been the Tennis Menu's daily Roland Garros show. Remember, head to thetennismenu.com to find your annual subscription for just $99.90 US, containing over 600 tennis-specific drills and resources to make you a better tennis coach. And remember, follow us at The Tennis Menu on Twitter and Instagram, and then also on Facebook, The Tennis Menu, and LinkedIn. We're there. Subscribe to our YouTube and also to our Anchor account on with our podcasts and Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. Mark Sifoulis, as always, it's an absolute pleasure chatting tennis with you. We'll give the hashtags one last time. Mark for Pharaoh, Mark for PM, Mark for Premier, hashtag better than Mouratoglou. You are an absolute legend, mate, and your coaching analysis, I don't care what anybody else says, it is unparalleled in my eyes, and you're an absolute legend.
It's parallel, definitely. And look, I think that the biggest thing from my perspective is it's a passion of all of ours. That's why we're doing this show. It's never been about money for us. We love what we do. And that's generally what we hope. We've been able to bring people closer to the game. We hope we've been able to take people inside the game. And that's basically been our motto is get them back into watching this game a little bit more. And obviously hearing some insights from all of us about the game has been really important. So, yeah, we're two Grand Slams in a month at the back end of the year. Never thought this would happen. Been an exciting journey with you boys, and looking forward to 2021, where hopefully we can do more Grand Slam shows.
Exactly right. Thank you very much, Mark Zafoulis and Joel Frugi. It's been an absolute pleasure. We do break point together, but doing a daily show during the Grand Slam has been fantastic, and it's been awesome chatting tennis with you as per usual, mate. So, yeah, thank you very much for your efforts throughout this tournament.
No, it's my pleasure, boys. Thanks for getting me involved. I've loved every second.
It has been fantastic joining the two of you guys throughout this French Open, and Mark as well throughout the US Open. We brought you two Grand Slams within a month, and hopefully bring on the 2021 Australian Open. But until then, this has been the Tennis Menu's Daily Roland Garros Show. Val Febbo, my name, Mark Zafoulis and Joel Frugi joining me as they have every day throughout this tournament. It's been an absolute pleasure bringing Roland Garros onto your computers, into your phones, and wherever else you've been listening. Thanks to all of you, the listeners, the viewers, for joining in and joining the conversation about tennis. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see you next year.